we're ready.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
This is on here for this, but I'm going to show you.
Good morning, everyone. Cell phones off. It is Tuesday, April 12th, 2005. We'll be having public hearing today on Senate Bill 5505, which relates to the Commission on Children and Families. And there's a lot of interest in this public hearing. The overflow room now is the Galleria because everything else is full. We will hear from three separate presentations to begin with, and then following that, we will open up for public testimony. We have sign-up sheets, and we'll hear first from those that have traveled more than 100 miles to be here. We're going to be asking that you please try and keep your remarks to about 3 minutes, because otherwise many people who have come a long way will not be able to address us, and we want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity. And so with those things in mind, we have, as a logistical matter, if you have a handout, then as you come up, would you please bring it over to the side, and then someone will take that. And if there's other issues, just come up and let us know what they are. When you sit down, please identify yourself so that we can have it on the record, and try and remember that there are people that are watching this from all over, and people are listening to this, and it'll be recorded. And so it's important that you speak up and identify who you are. All right. With that, are there any other items, Ms. Baker, that we need to address?
Mr. Chair, I would just point out that I will hand out to each of you a response from yesterday's subcommittee meeting about the Washington Policy Institute cost-benefit study on the Healthy Start program, and I'll distribute that to you as the first groups are coming up.
All right. We will begin. We'd like to start by hearing from a panel of three. If we could have Kathy Thompson, Jessica Stewart, and Michelle Rodriguez, please come forward.
Hi.
Good morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today, Representative Richardson and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Thompson. I'm the program manager for Deschutes County Healthy Start Ready Set Go program, and we came over this morning. I brought a couple of parents, and they'd just like to talk about their experiences in our program. And I'd first like to introduce Jessica Stewart. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. My name is Jessica Stewart, as she mentioned. And I just want to say that Ready, Set, Go has been a major asset in the last year and a half since I've had my daughter. There's so many things this program has given me, just, you know, wisdom of parenting and being a single, you know, young parent, and, you know, things specific like knowing, you know, what books are appropriate for her age, what foods to start her on when she starts, you know, when is the appropriate time that in her life that she's supposed to start doing certain things, mobility things, verbal skills, and knowing, you know, them teaching me just everything that there is to know, not everything there is to know, but most things, you know, that parents don't know about their kids when they first start out. And I'm so grateful. They're a huge asset in my life, like I said. They're a huge support group for me personally. You know, my Ready, Set, Go mentor comes at once every 2 weeks, meets with me and my daughter, and we can talk about things that are going on in my life, you know, things that are going on with my daughter that I need to, you know, work on, if there's any health issues with her, any physical issues, anything that's going on. And I just want to say that without this program, I don't know who I would turn to, where I would go to find, you know, the answers to the questions that I have. And I'm so grateful that Ready, Set, Go is there for me, you know. And that's it.
Can you talk about your accomplishments, what you're doing right now? in school? And
yeah, we can talk about my accomplishments. So I just graduated high school in Bend last June and started off fall term into Central Oregon Community College into criminal justice program. I'm going to be a probation officer, and I'm going to be done with my associate's degree in about a year. And I work full-time, go to school full-time, you know, 12 credits a term, take care of my daughter, you know, do the life things like laundry and, you know, doing the dishes, taking care of your everyday responsibilities on top of being a full-time student, you know, and having to be presentable at work every day because I'm pretty high up there in my business that I work at, and, you know, I have to put on the face and, you know, leave my personal matters at home at the door. And so that's my accomplishment.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Thank you. So
now I'd like to introduce Michelle Rodriguez, Chairman Richardson and members of the community. My name is Michelle Rodriguez, and I'm from Deschutes County, and I'm supporting the Ready, Set, Go program. I've been in the program now for 3 years, 3 years in July. My son will be three. My first home visitor, we had a really good relationship, and then she left the Deschutes County to somewhere else. And my home visitor now, she means so much to me. We're really close. We can talk about anything. She brings lots of handouts, things we can do. She always brings me information about things that are going on in the community, things that I can help my son with, as well as myself. Helps me set goals for me and my son, as well as for my family. We love to have her come to my house. She brings joy into our house. My son looks forward to seeing her every other week, and he's grown a really good relationship with her as well.
Mm-hmm.
We also really like the health nurse that they have with them that can come see my son so that we don't have to go every time to the pediatrics to ask them questions just about regular stuff, regular basic stuff about my son that doesn't really need a whole pediatric visit that we can just ask our home nurse. That's really helpful as well.
You know what, this would have been helpful if we had had it. Our first babies, we had twins, and we didn't know we were having twins until Kathy was in labor. And so we had borrowed a bassinet, and then when we came home from the hospital, we emptied a drawer out, put down some towels, and had a bassinet and a drawer. And the joke was that the baby cries, but of course we didn't. But anyway, we had to learn a lot about parenting, and so you guys really do have a step up. You know, it's nice of you to come forward and spend all this time to come here and share your thoughts on it. Are there other things you'd like to say?
I'd just like to say we also presented some written testimony from some of the other parents in our program that couldn't be here today, and I think you all have a folder in front of you. So those are letters from other parents in our program in Deschutes County. So
thank you very much.
And I think just the fact that they're up here really represents the growth that they've accomplished. So
that's right. It takes a lot of courage to come and face this stern-looking group here. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Senator Westland.
Mm-hmm. If I may, I'd just like to compliment our young mothers on the excellent job you did testifying and the courage it did take to get at that witness stand. I know even when we go testify in our own bills and we're very comfortable behind this guy, it gets a little more nervous when we're sitting on that side of the witness stand. Mm-hmm. You guys did great. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. There are some who have arrived late that would like to sign up on the sheet. We have 3 pages of names so far. If because of our efficiency and conciseness, we get through this list, then we will open it up if there's time available for those that would still like to testify who came late. Otherwise, we're going to be kind of hard-pressed to make it through the list that we have presently. We would like to invite Stephen Safer, Sue Miller, and Ross Carey, and Ray, looks like Brown or Brawley, to come forward.
Good morning, Chair Richardson and committee members. My name is Sue Miller. I'm the Executive Director of Family Building Blocks, which is the relief nursery in Salem serving Marion and Polk counties. There are 8 relief nurseries in Oregon and 1 trying to get started down in the Medford area. There are representatives of all of our relief nurseries here today. So if there are questions on any specific programs, there would be people who could try to respond to those. In a few moments, Stefan will present information, sort of an overview of the nurseries and focus on outcomes. Excuse me. However, I'd first like to just identify 3 essential elements that help sort of define what a relief nursery is. First of all, we're community generated. We end up in communities where they have already identified child abuse and neglect as a critical issue. They've prioritized it as a community, and they've identified a relief nursery as the model that the community wants to follow to deal with the issue. A couple of quick examples of how that has occurred. In Cottage Grove, back in 1992, 2 babies were killed from abuse. The Rotary Club actually was the one that stepped forward and said, that's not going to happen in our community. And they found the relief nursery model in Eugene, replicated it, and have a very successful nursery there 13 years later. In Portland in 2001, a group of professionals who'd been working in the correction system started to see the 3rd generation of families coming through the system. They said there's got to be a way to break this cycle. The group of people pulled together with community leaders and representatives formed a nursery. It's now the Children's Relief Nursery up in the St. John's area in North Portland. Most recent example is in Albany. The faith community, the hospital, child welfare agencies got together and said, there are too many kids who are in crisis and falling through the cracks. We need a relief nursery here. 2 months ago, they opened up 1 classroom of a relief nursery in Albany. So those are examples of how the community is the one that really steps forward and tries to set the agenda.
Can you explain to us why Albany is able to do it without state funding and the others require state funding?
Well, Albany was asked that question, and they were able to pull together the about $90,000 they needed to get started, but they will only be able to have 1 classroom, 1 set of teachers, and not be able to roll it out and be able to serve the long, long waiting list without some additional funding. They also, as they were raising money, and we all do this, Mr. Chair, is we've explained to our funders that it's a public-private partnership, that we have a responsibility to raise some of the money from our communities, but we also look to the state as a partner that has prioritized the safety of children and therefore will be a partner with us. So without the state funding, I guess we would be giving a very unfair message to our communities.
Okay, please continue.
All right. A second point I wanted to make is because of the way we get started from the community sort of boiling up, we continue to rely heavily on community support to run our nurseries, both financially but also in volunteer help. We couldn't run our nurseries without the support of volunteers. You'll hear more about this a little bit later, but in the current biennium, we have raised $7 million from private funds, which is more than double what we have received from state funding through the commission. So we're very committed to that. We also, last year, had 41,000 hours of volunteer help in our programs, and that's also a huge value to the kids and families we serve. The last point I want to make before turning it over to Stefan is we serve the highest need families. The families at intake average 15 risk factors. So these are families who have a whole lot of struggles in their lives. Some of the partners you've heard from already in your testimony, Healthy Start is certainly a key one, and Head Start will refer their highest need families to us. We'll work with them for a year or two, and then frequently our children will graduate and go into the Head Start program. So we are part of the system. It's a very important part with the partnerships that have been built up over the years, And that's sort of the slot that we nurseries fill.
I want to let you know that if we didn't have the pressure of other people that wanted to speak, we could spend a lot more time, but we're going to be needing to have you complete within
I'm
about 5 to 8 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay.
5 or 8 minutes?
5 to 8 minutes left for the panel.
Okay, sorry, we understood we had 20 minutes.
I know, but you know what? We can listen fast.
And I can talk fast.
Great.
Mr. Chair and distinguished members of the committee, my name is Stefan Safer. I'm the director of the Child and Family Program at the Northwest Regional Educational Laboratory in Portland. I'm a third-party contract evaluator with the Oregon Commission on Children and Families to gather and analyze data on the relief nurseries' efforts and looking at outcomes as well as processes. The Oregon Relief, what I have found from my research is that the Oregon Relief Nurseries serve very high needs families. They serve very young children and very vulnerable children. We have 3 years of data now, and these needs are increasing over the 3 year period of time. More risk factors. The Relief Nurseries appear to be a kind of unique program in that they're both a prevention and intervention program. They serve an unmet niche in the social service system between extreme programs. And the third to last page in your handout there that looks like this shows a graphic of the role of the relief nurseries in the social service system, sort of between the prevention programs like Head Start and Early Head Start, and the treatment programs, like residential treatment programs. There's an important middle ground there for something more intense than Head Start, less intense than kind of day treatment or residential treatment. It appears to be a collaborative, comprehensive, family-centered approach, effective at leveraging state funding. They've, over the period of 3 years, even though the actual dollars increased in terms of state funding, the percentage of state funds have decreased over the three-year period of time primarily because of increased foundation funding and some, to a smaller degree, federal funding. There are 7 state-funded relief nurseries, is that correct? And there's 2 in process in Albany and Medford. There's 2 in the Portland area. Of course, they are not serving nearly the needs that are out there. They all have waiting lists. The central mission is that they prevent child abuse or neglect by providing targeted, responsive, and research-based prevention services. The last 2 pages of your handout is a description of that research base with some references. Prevention services to families who are at risk and intervention services to families who have been abusive or neglectful is about 40% of the parents they serve. I have this on a later slide. Have been abusive to their children. They served 1,742 families. We're looking at data from 2003-2004, so the first year of this past biennium. The arrows on the slides here indicate whether it's an upward trend, a downward trend, or mixed over the three-year period. 90% of the families are at or below the poverty level. That's up slightly. 50% are ethnic racial minorities. That's up quite a bit. The population is more and more ethnic racial minorities. 26% of teen parents, that goes up and down probably primarily because there are targeted programs for teen parents other than the relief nurseries. 40% of the children are under 2 years of age, and that's critical because when you're talking about abuse prevention programs, you've got to intervene early to be effective. And so that's a figure that I look for when I'm evaluating child abuse programs. The average family has 15 risk factors.
We're
going to have to move ahead.
To the outcomes.
Okay, we're going to move ahead quickly here. Let me get to a few key points.
Thank you.
The average family is receiving 16 months of services. There's two core, real core service is a therapeutic early childhood program. And every program, however, also offers outreach to the community, referral, home visits, parent education, transportation, and respite care. The average cost per child is $4,821, and the average cost per slot, and there's explanations in the handout there, is about $7,000. This is a slide showing that the decreasing percentage of the state budget, increase of other budgets. This is for this fiscal year 2003-2004. The breakdown, you could see that the commission funding is 32% of the total funding that year. It's actually the preliminary data I'm getting for this year, it's a smaller percentage.
Or measurable outcomes. I mean, we know it's a good program. We understand that it's a high-risk population. What do you use to show that the money is being well spent and that you're getting the results other than individual, kind of testimonials?
Right. Here it is. Over 91% of the children who were receiving services were free from abuse, and that's a population where 37% of the families have substance abuse issues, 34 have involvement with law enforcement, and 75% are under and unemployed. Those are the three risk factors in the state of Oregon most associated with abuse. And those are between 5 and 10 times the general population. So when you look at this very high-risk population, you would predict a much higher rate of abuse.
Have there any comparisons with other states and as to the effectiveness of this program compared to other programs?
No, that takes a really substantial research effort that has never been undertaken or funded in order to do that. What we can do is kind of compare as best we can to the expected rate in Oregon with this young population, of the general population, and it's only a few percentage points different than the general population, whereas you would expect. If some of these risk factors are 5 to 10 times more in this population they serve, particularly these risk factors associated with abuse, you would expect the rates to be much, much higher. I can't give you an exact number.
That's fine. I'm just testing that.
The other thing we're looking at for outcomes...
Come on, please, Representative Hansen.
Well, yes. No, that's what I was hoping to get would be if you'd ever taken that data out and came up with an estimate for a test group with that mix of risk factors, we don't want an absolute blind test.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Okay. The materials that you provided are very thorough. We're actually running out of time as far as the presentation is concerned. Are there items that you can give to us other than what we can read? I mean, are there points that you'd like to focus on?
One of the things is the increased use of math, and it seems like that's an impact impacting some of these high needs over the period of time. Let me see if there's anything else. One more thing is that another thing I look at is there are recognition from other sources of for the program, and there's national recognition for this model from the Office of Child Abuse and Neglect, which is an agency of the Department of Health and Federal Department of Health and Human Services, that looked at it very carefully and found it to be an innovative program with noteworthy aspects, and just didn't view it as a quote highly effective program because the data is not available at this point in time.
All right.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen.
In the future, as you're doing your research on this program, if you could ever find information that would show, since you're dealing with so many parents that are involved with substance abuse and particularly meth, if there's a difference in terms of families that are enrolled in this model, whether they're more successful in terms of drug treatment programs or recovery, whether involvement in this also helps to help their recovery process.
Yeah, and I can say preliminary data shows that the parents who we can get into treatment programs, yes, there's a difference, and there's fewer, less abuse. The problem is that the large number of parents who, especially meth-abusing parents, who refuse to get involved in treatment.
I understand that there's only a 40% recovery of or success rate of parents that actually get into treatment with meth, and so even that is mm-hmm. difficult. We're hoping that there's unintended consequences from working with the families that might spill over, but
I'll
like everyone.
I will be looking for that in the future.
Mr. Chair, just in response to the question, we're handing out information from the Relief Nursery in Eugene that specifically deals with the substance abuse and the statistics.
But right, now thank I'd you
like
very
to
much.
Turn it to Ross Carey.
We have less than a minute.
Okay. Chair Richardson, thank you for the opportunity, committee, to be here today. My name is Ross Carey. I am the region president for U.S. Bank and also the standing president for Family Building Blocks. I know that you are faced with, the reason we're here today is that you have a limit to what your dollars and where they should go. We appreciate that. My particular testimony relates to that very issue, and that is that today, if we spend $5,000 on a child in these programs that have been addressed today, they will, and we do have studies that show the information that you had, our success rate of keeping that child out of foster care and ultimately out of incarceration later in later years is about 90%. And so we're either going to spend $5,000 today or $14,000 in foster care, or $45,000 only when they're in a youth. That doesn't mean if they move into the penitentiary later on. So those are the compelling investment reasons, and I understand that yesterday you had the opportunity to meet with Rob Greenwald from the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis, and he has studies that show the rate of return investment by investing early can be in the upwards of 17%.
Okay, thank you very much. We're out of time, and we're approaching the 20-minute mark anyway, and so we need to move on. We appreciate very much the time, effort, the information that you have. I would like to say for everyone that there is no question that we believe that early intervention has a tremendous benefit for children, for families, for society. The question that we have is, there's like 10 programs that we could name that all have the same basic goal and all come forward and say the same truth, that early intervention makes a difference. The difficulty we have is determining with limited funds where those funds go, and there's also no question that Relief Nurseries is doing a fine job. We are very grateful for the dedication, for the contributions and generosity of the local participants who are willing to contribute a 2-to-1 match, private versus public, and we're going to do all that we can to utilize the funds that we have available in the best possible manner. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we have rooms and rooms of people that would like to also be heard. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we now will hear from representatives of CASA, Judy Stegler, Joe O'Connor, and Cole Ziegler. And we would like to, we see Janet Crossing is in the room, so what I'm going to do is let you know who's on deck and who's in the hole, all right? And so after this group, we'll have Judy Carlson, and then following them, Janet to mint, Carlson will have Dave Gillian and Lee Weisenberg in case they're distant. So they can hear. What is it? Oh, Dave Lee and Gillian Weisenberg, sorry.
Okay.
Hi there.
No. Good morning. No, I'll let you know. He's a little nervous.
We're taking turns here.
That's right. I'll introduce you in a few minutes. Okay. All right. Good morning, Representative Richardson, and members of the committee. I'm Judy Stegler, and I am the chair or the director. What am I?
You're good at what you do. We know that.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate it. I'll remember that one.
I am the director of the Deschutes County Court-Appointed Special Advocate, or CASA, program, and have served in that capacity for a little over 6 years. I come to the position as an attorney who has had an active practice in Central Oregon, prior to that for about 18 years, and practiced juvenile and family law a good portion of that time. So I'm very familiar with the juvenile justice system as well as the child welfare system. And when this position opened up back in 1998, I jumped at the opportunity to take over the job and work in the capacity of the child welfare system, doing something very proactive. I want us to remember that these programs are mandated by both federal and state law. Under Oregon law, an advocate must be appointed in every case where there is an allegation of abuse and neglect involving a child. If we don't meet that criteria, but that's what the statute says, and we endeavor to serve that as best we can. There are 31 programs which serve the children of all 36 counties in the state. The majority are nonprofit or affiliated with a nonprofit program, though several are located within county government. All programs are coordinated with the commission systems, the Commission on Children and Family Systems within their counties, and the state dollars are passed through that system directly to the local programs. The Oregon Commission on Children and Families serves as the state coordinating organization, providing, among other services, technical assistance, training, support, and oversight of the local programs. We, in 2004, and I'm not going to go, I've provided you with a sort of facts and figures and information. I'm not going to go over all of that. I'm just going to hit a couple of highlights. In 2004, CASA programs in Oregon served nearly 4,000 children. There were 1,363 volunteers doing that service. These volunteers are citizen volunteers who are trained in the intricacies and the specifics of the child welfare program. And I just will add in here that Senator Westland's wife was one of Deschutes County's first CASA volunteers. So he's very familiar with the program.
I might also mention that we adopted a daughter 10 years old, and our contact in at first finding out that there was this girl who's 10 whose mother was terminally ill and needed to be adopted. The mother, not the mother, the daughter, was through a CASA worker who was very, very concerned.
Very much.
Familiar with the program as well.
Very good. Our funding comes from a variety of sources. It approximately 21%, and when I cite these figures, I'm talking about statewide because it varies program to program, but 21% is provided through state funding. Approximately 54% comes through private donations from Oregon businesses, foundations, and individual donors. You might ask why CASA programs are important, setting aside the fact that they're mandated by law and we have to have them.
That does give you a step up.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that sort of encourages the existence of the program.
Because of time.
Right. And I'm going to get right to this little guy here in a second.
There's time for that.
These programs literally are the eyes and ears for the court. They are probably the only element within the formal child welfare system, i.e., I'm talking about the juvenile justice system, that focuses solely on the best interests of the child. That's the only client for the CASA advocate, and they advocate for those best interests and for achieving safe and permanent homes for these children in an expeditious way. We have leveraged dollars like you wouldn't believe. In 2004, over 112,000 hours of volunteer time was spent in these representing these children and advocating for them. The effectiveness, I believe, if you talk to judges, they will tell you that they help give them a unique perspective on the situation at hand. And I think most of all, the effectiveness is seen in what happens with the children who are the subject of these cases. And with that, I'm going to introduce a couple of friends here. Joe O'Connor is a CASA in the Jackson County program, and Cole Ziegler, is that right, is one of his CASA children. And I'm going to let them talk a little bit about why they think the CASA program is important.
Good. My name is Joe O'Connor, and I am a CASA, and I have been for 2.5 years. My very first case assigned to me by the courts was Cole Ziegler. Cole is a delightful friend, and he has graduated, and he's living with his father. Let me just be really brief about this, but it was an unsuitable environment in which Cole lived, on attending school and that sort of thing. And his father, living in another state, came and did everything he could to solve the problem, and he now lives with his father. I'm very proud of his father, Daniel, over there. If you'll raise your hand, Dan. Thank you, Dan. I would really like you to hear from Cole. Go ahead, Cole.
Because you're what it's all about, right, Cole?
Yeah, this is the guy that is going to be a contributing member of our society. To that, I give you Cole.
Good morning, Cole.
Hi.
How are you this morning?
Good.
It sounds like you have a pretty good friend.
Yes, I do.
How long have you known Joe?
I think it's 2 years. I've known him 2 years, I think.
Has he been able to help you very much?
Yeah, he's helped me a lot.
And now you get to live with your dad all the time?
Yeah.
I bet that makes you happy.
Yeah.
Can you tell him how he helped you?
He helped me by, with courts. I'm not really sure how he helped me. He just helped me.
That was his job.
Out of the mouth of the babe.
Well, really.
But you feel comfortable when you're with him, huh?
Yeah.
It's good to have somebody who helps watch out for you.
Did he let you know what was going on in your case?
Yeah, he did. He did.
And help you figure out what was going to be happening next? And ask you what you wanted to do?
Really, Elena mostly talked to him on the phone. I don't know how many times I saw him when I was in foster care, but I saw him quite a few times.
We went to the circus?
Yes, circus.
And we played on skateboard?
Yeah, we did. And even
I'd like to see that, Joe.
Yeah, how'd he do, Cole?
Okay. Well, not as good as me, but...
You knew that.
You know, it's very nice of you to spend the effort and to come all the way here so that we could get to know you a little bit and know how important this program has been in your life. And, Joe, we want to thank you for the ongoing service that you're giving not only to Cole but to others that you get assigned. The work that CASA does is so valuable because it is without ulterior motive other than just to serve.
That's right.
And you've prepared your whole life to do this work that you're doing now.
Great. And there are 117 of us in Jackson County, and we're serving 260 kids.
That's wonderful.
That's good. Bad thing, 250 we could also serve. And we will get there. We're a good CASA organization.
Last week I met with Ed Meyer, the head of CASA for Jackson County, and he explained those concerns as well. So thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we appreciate you having us.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
That wasn't so bad.
Good job, Cole.
Hi.
Goodbye.
Did it hurt, Cole?
No, but I was really nervous.
You did very well.
I love it.
You did very good.
Okay. Good morning, Janet Cross.
Right.
Good morning. It's going to be hard to top that. I have some handouts that should be coming to you. And while those are coming to you, I did prepare testimony, which I'm not going to read to you.
Okay.
I'll just hit a few highlights, and then I have about four other points that I want to make in addition to that.
We'd like you to lead the way.
I will, and I'll be very quick.
As far as 3 minutes. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
just so that you know why I'm so passionate about this work, I started as an employee with the State Commission on Children and Families. I worked on their budget. I was the fiscal person, and I was a regional coordinator in Southern and Central Oregon. I've served as a local director in Lane County. I've been a consultant to Deschutes, Douglas, Jefferson, Josephine, Lake, and Marion counties. I served on the State Commission. I served on the committee you're sitting on, overseeing this budget, and now I sit on the Marion County Children and Families Commission. So I've seen this thing from about every angle that there is. In my prepared testimony, we have a huge issue in Marion County with child abuse and neglect. It is an unacceptable level. We have 8 correctional institutions, if you count the state hospital, the jail, and the juvenile centers, the 2 training centers. Healthy Start, Family Building Blocks, Court-Appointed Special Advocates are 3 programs that really help us address this issue. They're not funded enough, but we take what we can get, and we really appreciate that. We also rely heavily on our local commission. You'll see a number of different examples in there about why our local commission works. We have community progress teams in each high school catchment area. They leverage an average of $7.29 for every dollar that you give us from the state, and we appreciate that as well. We have a very high methamphetamine issue in Marion County, and during the just 9 months in 2004, 891 child abuse petitions were filed in the courts due to meth. A supervisor recently described in a meeting I was in of child welfare workers waiting in their offices in their cubes with children from 2 a.m. till 8 so they could call for resources for these kids. We're working together as a community. The commission helps bring us together so that we can address these problems. Yesterday, I was at the Association of Oregon Counties. I serve on their legislative committee. Bill Hansel, who's the president-elect of NACO, made a motion to support the governor's funding level for the budget, the governor's structure in the budget, and to support House Bill 3029, which moves the juvenile crime prevention funds into the State Commission on Children and Families. I was proud to second that motion. That is our position from AOC. My third point I want to make is that while services are very important, there's a role for the State Commission. Now, you talk about the state staff, but there is a State Commission also, and a local commission and their staff to provide advice at the state level to you, the legislature, and to the governor, at the local level to me and my colleagues as a Board of County Commissioners on policy issues and budgets as they relate to children and families. That requires, in my view, that those entities be in an independent position and that they combine a myriad of different disciplines, law enforcement, public safety, education, and so forth. If they are not independent, they will have an interest. They will be buried underneath and not be free to be able to tell the policymakers what really needs to happen. If you hear nothing else today, I hope that you hear that in terms of where that location of that state commission ought to be. I have a number of other examples of why the state commission helps the local level. In the interest of time, I'll share those with you later if you would like to hear them. The last point I want to make is on the starts, because I heard that discussion yesterday, and I'll tell you, it drove me nuts, okay? And let me explain to you why. I did some math last night. I'm on the fair board. I only had an hour. I did this between 10 and 11, so I've got some old data. You guys can ask for the good data, but I calculated off of our census report that in Marion County, we have 21,874 kids 0 to 4. If you take 18% of those kids, which is what Children First says is in poverty, that leaves you 3,937 kids. I got some data that I did in 97-98, but I don't think we've added a lot since 97-98. We had 803 Head Start slots. That includes state and federal. We have 100 slots in Family Building Blocks. We had 359 Healthy Start slots at that point, which I know we've got less now. I couldn't get Even Start, but there's only 8 Even Start programs in Oregon. I did that in Google, all right? That leaves 2,575 children in Marion County that don't have a place in an early childhood program. That's why there's not duplication, because there aren't enough programs for the kids. We're piecing things together, and I hope you get that, because that's the key issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I might mention for everyone who's concerned about this concern that we have over duplication, it's not about whether or not too many children are getting services. It's whether or not with each program there are resources that could be going to the children that are being used for management, for directors, for advertising, and all these other things, because every program has to have all of those things. And so that is one of the areas that we're looking at. Thank you very much for your succinct presentation. We now would invite Dave Gillian and Dave Lee and Gillian Weisenberg.
Gillian?
Gillian Weisenberg, thank you.
Dave Lee.
Glad you're here, Gillian.
Nice.
I've never had to follow Janet, but I hope I don't have to again. It was very good.
You don't have to speak faster. Just not cover everything.
Good morning, Chair Richardson and fellow committee members. I guarantee you won't have to remind me to hurry up here. My name is David Lee, and I'm a school resource officer with the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, and I'm also a member of the Douglas County Commission on Children and Families. Been a member since 1999. As a school resource officer and a commission member, I have firsthand knowledge of the many ways that the commission's efforts have improved the health and well-being of children and families. When I initially started my assignment working in the schools, I noticed a lot of people were working on ways to help children and families, but there wasn't a lot of communication amongst those different agencies. I then watched and learned as the commission helped me bring these folks to the table for a common goal, and that goal was and still is to help foster healthy children, strong families, and caring communities. Our local commission brings together family and child-serving agencies such as the schools, public and mental health, child welfare, and juvenile justice with community members to develop strategies together that prevent child abuse, encourage our young people to stay in school, stop involvement with substance abuse, and discourage children from criminal behavior. The commission saw a need for after-school care, especially in the rural areas of Douglas County. Sutherland, Reedsport, and Riddle after-school programs were funded by the commission. The principal of the Riddle Elementary School thought that there would be approximately 20 people attending because of the child care shortage in Riddle. To his surprise and ours, we learned that he has a greater need, and they averaged approximately 50 youth that quarter. We know that between the hours of 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. are the important times to keep our youth occupied with constructive things, or they'll get into trouble. These after-school programs have helped reduce the juvenile crimes in those areas as well as others. Our commission leverages resources to obtain federal and foundation grants and to recruit community volunteers to work with children and families. The commission provides staff support through our Early Childhood Partnership Group, and our director chairs that group. We have focused on parenting classes for families with children ages 0 to 18. I'm proud to say that we've been so successful with positive outcomes that classes now have waiting lists. We were awarded a sizable three-year Ford Family Grant and grants from the Umpqua Band of Cow Creek Indians, Oregon Community Foundation, and C. Giles Hunt. Both the local and state commissions are committed to supporting Douglas County's children and families and making the best use of our limited resources. We need to continue to look at ways to prevent crime and break the cycle of families in despair through prevention. In my role as a patrol deputy, in my previous role as working as patrol deputy, much of my work was reactive. What's the better choice? We all know the answer to that in this room. I urge you to find a way to sustain the commission system at the state and county levels. Commissions have been instrumental in helping prevent child abuse, increase young children's readiness to learn, reduce high school dropout rates, to encourage youth to avoid substance abuse and delinquency, and increase the health and well-being of children and families in every community. We have been very successful so far, but our work's far from being done. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jillian, if I had put a face to the name, I would have gotten it correct the first time.
That's quite all right. And when I was in school, I always used to cringe when people try and say my name because I knew it would never come out right, so it's okay. Well, for the record, I'm Jillian Wiesenberg, Chair Richardson and Committee, and I just wanted to cover a couple points. Yesterday you asked about the State Commission and, you know, what kind of value they have to the local commissions, and what I'd like to tell you is when our judge, Joan Seitz, called me up and said, you know, I'm a domestic violence judge and we have a problem, we want to work with domestic violence, we want to pull everyone together, it was the State Commission that I was able to call and say, okay, this is what our judge wants to do, what's going on around the state, what are best practices, you know, what can we use to help our community? And they were there to give me what I needed as far as resources, evidence base, and technical support all the way through. We have a really good working group now on domestic violence. Children of incarcerated parents, we're working with that group right now. I went to the State Commission and said, okay, what's going on? They talked about Coffee Creek, and they talked about all the resources in the state and, you know, how they could help us. When we were mapping our early childhood group, which Dave talked about for what exists in our county, we have our partners, which are Head Start, Healthy Start, all the ABC, you know, like for Babies First, CASA Relief Nursery, Healthy Start, YMCA child care providers, early intervention, mental health, domestic violence, Hispanic community, drug and alcohol. And what we found was we all got together. We've been together since the mid-90s, and we said, okay, we're going to do a mapping and find out who's doing what. What we know in our county is we don't have high administration. We don't have overlap. What we do is we do a lot of talking. I chair that group. We have monthly meetings. And what we do is usually the commission does a lot of the mail-outs because people don't have the money to do advertising. What we try and do is put more funds to the kids. So when we need more information, we go to the state commission and say, okay, this is what our group wants to do. Right now what we're working on is a brokerage in our community, and that's why Ford Family funded us, and we're looking at consistent funding. So we're going to businesses and saying, are you willing to give us $1,500 a year so that we can teach parents parenting classes? And it's been very successful. Our partners, our relief nursery teaches one class. Our drug and alcohol people are teaching another. The state commission helped us with what are the best practices for parenting, because if we're going to teach parenting classes, we want to know that we're going to have results. So I hope, you know, that as you look at this and you look at the need for technical assistance and technical, you know, needs, we go to the state commission. And also, I was named chair of our local public safety coordinating council, which, you know, is an interesting position for me. The reason I was named chair was because they looked at everyone around the room and said, well, she's the most neutral person here. And that's the function that the commission serves, that we're not in any agency. We're there to help the community. We're there to be the conduit to make things happen. And that's what the State Commission is a separate entity. They're the neutral body that isn't invested in any agency on the state level, and they're the ones that people look to and say, well, they don't have a vested interest. And that's the most important piece to me. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate you coming in. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to say I have not met Deputy Lee on the road, and for that I'm I do know of his work on the commission and greatly appreciate that. Jillian has been, as many of you in this room have, diligent in her commitment to be here. I have used her as a resource to understand and better understand these programs. We've had after work or after hours work groups to discuss these programs to get more understanding of how it works. I appreciate you bringing the insight of how you tie together local programs with the state agency, because that is a difficult match for us to make, and we need to understand that. I would encourage you to continue with that process so that this committee understands the relevance of both the local work and how the state provides help to you on that. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. And you'll notice, like Janet, I'm very passionate, too. <We're all laughs>
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'd like to invite three to come up. These are people that have traveled over 100 miles, and so by having three, it'll cut down on some of the travel time to get from wherever you're sitting or to the front. So just come up, take a seat, and we'll get started with the first one that comes that gets there. We'd like to have Ann Gill from Wallawa County Commission on Children and Families. Tammy Beeney from Deschutes County, and Tim Rush.
Okay, okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. I actually brought someone else that's not on the list, Valerie Johnson, so I think that's...
In the legislature, you can divide your time. Okay. Who would like to be on this one?
Good morning, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. I'm going to be very brief because so much of what I have to say has already been very well said. My background was...
You need to identify yourself.
Oh, excuse me. I'm Ann Gill from Wallawa County. Wallawa.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just have a hard time.
But that's good.
A little pressure, all these people staring.
Yeah, there is a lot of pressure. I gave you three pieces. One I wrote, collecting a variety of things that are important to me. One is a letter from a local program, and the other is an executive summary called Exceptional Returns from a very large report that I read, which echoes much of what Rob Grunewald said yesterday, looking at... early childhood programs as a way of community development. When a community allows any group to become disenfranchised for any reason, race, religion, gender, economic, or intellectual status, the entire community becomes poorer. And I'm looking at this as the big picture for the great state of Oregon. Just briefly, some key points that maybe weren't pointed out earlier that are really relative to my county. 18% of Wallowa County children do indeed live in poverty. Our local commission programs that are supported by our local commission, have in the past two bienniums leveraged over $600,000 in other resources and have logged more than 10,000 volunteer hours. Our population is scattered at about 2.2 people per square mile. The cost of doing business in Wallowa County in many ways is more expensive than doing business in metropolitan areas. A child's brain, as has been pointed out over and over again, learns by practice. And if that practice is not a high-quality practice, practice that is going to allow a child to learn the skills so that they can go to school ready to learn, the cycle of poor school performance, low job skills, substance abuse, involvement with the law is going to be repeated over and over again. The State Commission has provided for us valuable data that has allowed our county to write grants for more funding for programs. It provides the infrastructure that allows grassroots organizations to be unified and share resources and operate efficiently. The study that I gave you...
1 minute.
Yes.
1 minute.
1 minute. All right. The study that I gave you actually shows that by investing in early childhood programs, you have about a 3-to-1 return on your money. They also point out that by investing in early childhood programs, we would improve the skills of a large fraction of the United States workforce. I'm looking at that as Oregon's workforce. And in turn, raise the gross domestic product, reduce poverty, and strengthen the U.S. global competitiveness. Within 45 years, the increase in earnings due to these investments would likely boost the gross domestic product by nearly 1% or $107 billion in 2004 dollars. The commission system has built a solid body of accountability. I think it's a good investment for the future of Oregon.
Thank you very much. Tammy?
Hello, Chair Richardson, members of the committee, which is getting smaller as we speak. thank you. My name is Tammy Bainey, and I'm a full-time volunteer with Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families. My background is first as a CASA, then as a foster parent, and also now as the chair of the Commission on Children and Families. As a full-time volunteer, I could give my time to a lot of different organizations, and we are the only lay commission in the state of Oregon, and so we are all volunteers, not agents. People, and we have a little different perspective than most commissions on how things are conducted. One thing, though, that I really find is important is that we do look for duplication of services, and we do look for efficiencies, and we do look for those types of things, as do all commissions. And a lot of the things that were brought up yesterday, we're talking about, should we block grants? Should we go under DHS or another agency, and so that we could share those efficiencies and such? And the beauty of what makes us who we are is being a separate entity. And I know that others have said that today as well, but the ability to bring people to the table and actually break down those barriers and be able to have good work be done, it's because we are not a threat to anyone within the community. What we bring is a broad perspective of how can we get this done as partners, collaborating, and how can we move forward in the best needs of the community. In talking about all the starts and all the early childhood programs, another piece of that is that we are able to share resources, and we are able to, for instance, in Deschutes County, we have built campuses where people can share their resources, share their line staff, share all of those opportunities to share the efficiencies, because each relief nursery or its CASA or its Ready, Set, Go or Healthy Start, those all have targeted groups of children that they're focusing on, but they are catching the same children in different areas as well. And so it's a handoff, in essence. It's maybe the needs are getting a little bit less along the way, but there still are needs. There are the parents are still, maybe they're not in the high crisis need, but then they need the healthy start piece. They are in need then of the standard, I'm a new parent and now I'm not in crisis, but what do I do with this child? How do I teach them? How do I know that they're flourishing in their environment? And so it would seem as a standard taxpayer, which I am, that we have a lot of starts and we have a lot of programs and we have a lot of overhead. But really, once you scratch the surface, what I've found is that that's not really true. We have a handoff and we have partnerships and collaboration. And the other thing that I really wanted to emphasize is the importance of the state commission in helping the local commissions. Each commission being different, each commission would need different things from the state commission. So I feel that if you ask each individual county what they get from the state commission, it may be different. But their role at the table helps us be better leaders, better facilitators, and do our jobs better in engaging the community to do good work on the ground. So okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I might add that, you know, you do bring up a good point as far as the multiple programs are concerned in that there's a additional leveraging that takes place. You know, one program may be able to get volunteers that wouldn't volunteer to someone else. There's also different contacts and contributions, you know, not only volunteering of time, but also financial that might not come from one program, but do from another.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim.
Very good. Representative Richardson and committee members, thank you for having me here. My name is Tim Rusk. I'm executive director at Mountain Star Family Relief Nursery in Deschutes County. And just want to share a few thoughts with you. Much of my story has already been told this morning because of the testimony around the relief nursery. And it's very convenient I came right after Tammy because she shares my thoughts about the role of the local commission. And I just wanted to illustrate a tiny bit for Mountain Star Relief Nursery as a program that grew out of our community plan, our community plan. And through the local commission, we were able to get some flexible funding that helped us get established. The local commission provided a forum to make sure that our services were integrated with other services and that there was really a systems approach, a system of care, to make sure that even though we came in with a model, a relief nursery model, that model worked for Deschutes County. That was really important. The local commission also helps us provide an accountability system, and actually that's at the local commission level through our contracts, but also at the state level through the evaluation process that's been contracted through Northwest Regional Educational Labs, so that accountability piece has really been important. And just the fourth point is around being a lay board in Deschutes County is very valuable for us as a nonprofit getting started, because we get to engage directly with the community. What I've found is that it's easier to build relationships with the agencies, but how do you reach into the community and really generate that community support that's going to help us survive through the ups and downs of the state funding cycles and really ensure the sustainability of our program?
Did you want to reserve any time?
Yes. Better go quick. I would like to introduce Valerie Johnson. She's a mother of four children who's taken some time from work and traveled here from Deschutes County to be able to address you.
Hi, Valerie.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. My name is Valerie Johnson. I think I'm here today representing several hundred people in Deschutes County. I happen to be one of those recovering meth addicts that I heard them speaking about earlier, who was had their children in an abusive situation, neglectful situation, and who also went through residential drug and alcohol treatment. I have just a little bit over a year and a half clean. I have used all of the agencies that we've discussed here today in my life since I got out of residential treatment, and I've used all of them in a different way. I work full-time, and I'm a single mom. I take care of three of my four children on a daily basis. And without these agencies in my life, I wouldn't be getting a lot of the parenting classes that I need. In the past, I've struggled with raising my children, and I'm at a point in my life where I would do anything to be a good mom to them. If it means taking parenting classes till they're 18, I would do it. I've been able to use these agencies in my life for one thing or another, for the different ages of my child, it seems like there's a different agency there with some type of a resource for me. They help me with parenting classes. They are a support to me emotionally, mentally, physically, in any way that I need them to be. They're there for one thing or another. Without them, I don't know how I would be able to maintain my household, doing it all on my own.
Valerie, or maintain your sanity. I mean, it is a challenge raising three or four children anyway, but you, going through all that you are, that you show tremendous courage, and we commend you for your the fight that you're fighting and the success that you're having and you'll yet have.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Getting better.
Okay, we'd like to invite Ken Williams, Brenda Comini, and Patrice Ruska, if they'd come forward. And then on deck, looks like James Boston, Roxanne Jones, and Mary Curtis Gramley, I think. You'd be next. So... you're in the middle. Why don't you start?
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Kim Williams. I am going to address today our testimony, bear testimony today with regards to three counties, three very rural counties, Frontier Counties, Pioneer Counties, that are Wheeler, Gillum, and Sherman County. The program that I am with is North Central ESD Early Education. It is a Head Start program that partners with the commission at a local level to serve children in community preschools. And I can tell you that the impact of not having commission dollars in those three counties will leave 90 children, 3 to 5, without a preschool and without educational settings, as well as those children birth to 5 without any early childhood contact or experience at all. It is a partnership and not a duplication of services that we offer, as well as quality and education for our parents and our families and community support.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thanks for coming so far. The work you're doing is tremendous.
My pleasure.
Brenda?
Chair Richardson, members of the committee, I'm Brenda Comini, and I'm from Crick County. You were really close on the last name, though. I am before you today. I am a former member of the commission, and before that the Juvenile Services Commission and the Youth Commission in Crick County, and now am the director. And I am here to talk to you a little bit today to share with you the process that we went through in terms of our Healthy Start and Early Childhood piece. You have heard the numbers that Janet shared with you about percentages and duplication of services and how and how those pieces came together. We often refer in our county, which is not as small as the frontier counties, but fairly small and very rural. We have often talked about our systems being put together in kind of a house of cards, not from the terms of how fragile, but in the terms of how we've had to piece things together to provide services for our families. When we started doing the comprehensive planning process, we looked at statistics from trends before that, but statistics from 1999 and 2000. And in our county, where the rest of the state was seeing a reduction in child abuse and neglect to the tune of 6.9%, we actually were seeing a 66% increase in child abuse and neglect in our county. And so that really spurred us to take a look at that as a huge issue for us. We involved the State Commission as part of our team in our House of Cards, our local commission, our local county court, and other agency folks, and community members to help us decide what we could do because it just wasn't acceptable. The State Commission provided us with the information about Healthy Start and how that program has provided services within communities. We have all the starts, but similar to the picture that Janet portrayed, we have a capacity that doesn't meet our need. And so when Healthy Start came into the picture, it very clearly wasn't a duplication to any of the existing services, but it actually brought a piece of connection to families at the birth level that none of our other programs had. And so with the technical assistance from the state, the training, the information that was available from other programs, it helped us sell this as not a huge job to put in place because there were resources available to help us. We didn't have to start from scratch and convince our local hospital, who was willing to take it on eventually, that they were going to have to undertake a huge research project to figure out how to get this going. And we were able to put that in place and serve families. Our child abuse and neglect statistics for 2004 are significantly reduced. We've been working on this for 4 years, and we really attributed that to the connections of our early childhood partners, the increase in capacity, the help from the state system in terms of evaluation and putting that in place in a way that we know that it will have the outcomes that we want as a community. Okay. I provided just a few things for you that I wanted to let you know. There's a personal testimony from a member in the Healthy Start program and a little bit about our system development. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, and Chair Richardson and members. My name is Patrice Ruska, and I'm the director of the Arlington Child Care Center in Arlington, Oregon. Arlington is in Gillum County and is a frontier county. And the reason why I'm here is because without the funding from the Commission on Children and Families, most of our program would be non-existent. And we serve an average of 37 children per quarter. We're licensed for 12 children at a time. Those children, I have many, many mothers who, to be honest, could not afford to come today, who emailed from their offices. To many of you, hopefully you'll be receiving their emails shortly. I have a couple of letters to send to you who are very concerned about the welfare of their children. Excuse me. The programs that you have heard here, testimonies from other agencies such as Healthy Start, Head Start, and other programs such as that, are in our program. However, we have a very large population of families that are just between that poverty level and lower middle class. And they look to our program, who gets a major support from our local Commission on Children and Families, to help with parenting classes, to look into the communities to find out what the needs are, and they come to me and they say, well, we have this need, and how can this be met? And they actually go to our local Commission on Children and Families meetings, and that is their only support system. We do not have a county health department in our county. In order for families to get any services, they have to drive at least 50 miles one way to get any kind of services for mental health, to go to any kind of specialist for medical care. And they look to our commission for all those things to happen within our community because they cannot afford to take a whole day's work, wages away to go travel to get needs for just maybe one of their children. And our average families have two children. And so I'm telling you that without these programs, our rural frontier programs with those children will disappear.
Thank you very much for taking the time and representing those that couldn't be here. We'll go ahead and move to the next three. And if you've signed up and you feel like what you had to say has been expressed already, do not feel duty-bound to say it again. Would you like to say one other thing?
Please? I don't know what these
are. Right over here. Thank you. Okay, we're now, we'll hear from James Boston, Roxanne Jones, Mary Curtis Gramley. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Representative Richardson and members of the committee. I've got four points to make. I'm Jim Boston. I'm the rector of St. Luke's Episcopal Church when I get paid, and I'm the vice chair of the county, Josephine County Commission for Children and Families, part of which is served by Senator, by Representative Richardson. First point is there have been questions raised about the role of the State Commission and its staff. And I would like to suggest to you that to cut that off, or even to reduce it, is cutting off our research and development capacity and our quality control capacity. Any organization, especially a large one, isn't going to be functioning very well or efficiently if it gives up research and development, if it gives up quality control and accountability. Some of that is mandated by the sources of funding, some of which are federal, and somebody's going to have to do it anyway. And new people will have to learn if the people that are doing it now are lost in their expertise and experience. Illustration of that is I went to a class on Saturday where we heard about Winston Churchill's leadership techniques and skills.
We have two minutes left, so
I'm going to try to move fast. Anyway, he created an office of statistics to keep himself honest. That's the sort of thing that we still need. We talked about piecing things together. We have to piece things together because that's where the resources are. It might be nice to have a single unitary system that took care of all the kinds of needs that the Commission addresses, but I dare say that the bureaucracy required for that would be greater than the kind of glue, the kind of networking that is provided by our present system. Not ideal, certainly, but it's what we got, and it's better than nothing by a long shot. And the role of the commissions bring in vastly greater efficiency. In our own county, in the Illinois Valley, an area of considerable poverty and need, we have three programs doing early childhood visitation. Those, because of the work of the commission, were able to work together, able to arrange so that people seeking access to services at any one of those places or a number of others would be fed into the right place. One of them looks after first child families, another one families that have more than one child, another takes care of the folks that can get transportation and don't need to have somebody go to them.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your coming.
Okay. Thank
Next,
you.
Next, Roxanne.
Good morning, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. My name is Roxanne Jones, and I am the Community Safety Net Coordinator in Jackson County. And the number one priority for the Jackson County Commission on Children and Families has been the reduction of child abuse and neglect in our county. We've been fortunate to have a very strong local Commission on Children and Families that has partnered with child welfare and many other agencies to develop the community safety net prior to even the state having funding available. So that laid the groundwork. So when I walked into the position 5 years ago, the groundwork was laid to start building a very strong infrastructure for working with child welfare and the families in our community to reduce child abuse and neglect. We take approximately 1,200 referrals a year, and each one of those referrals we look at each referral to determine which would be the most appropriate resources for that family. If another agency is already working with that family, we then in turn make an enhanced referral to that agency so that we do not have the duplications of services. The Commission on Children and Families through flexible state funds provides us $79,000 a year, which then in turn with those 1,200 families is costing us about $65.83 to go out and offer each one of those family services. We do about 600 referrals per year to our partners so that the duplication of services doesn't happen. And want to talk about the 87 families that we did do case management services with last year. Only two of those families ended up with an open case with child welfare 6 months after the close of our services. That's 267 children from those 87 families that we worked with that are only five ended up in the child welfare system. Without the commission to provide the funding, our infrastructure in our county would go away. We are the connective tissue between the agencies and the schools and all of the other programs that are in our county that aren't state funded that keeps the networking happening and working for children. And so it's a very important piece of what we do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Representative Richardson. My name is Mary Curtis Gramley, and I've been involved with the Jackson County Commission on Children and Families for over 7 years in a variety of roles. I've served as the director of the CASA program and been a member of the commission, chairperson of the Early Childhood Partnership Team, and I'm now working with a group of folks in Jackson County to start a children's relief nursery. I'm pleased we've been able to hear today the voices of folks like Cole and the other moms, because I think it is these voices that tell the real story. The real message for all of us comes from the babies in the relief nurseries, from the foster children who found safe and permanent homes, and from the recovering parents who now have hope and can recommit themselves to providing safe and nurturing homes for their children. I personally believe that the commission and its structure and its programs work because they have an intervention and a prevention orientation, because they are accountable to local communities, and primarily because they respond to urgent human needs. I urge you to invest in a system and programs that can respond to the voices that often go unheard. Thank you so much.
Thank you, all three of you. And I hope you understand about being short there. And whatever you didn't get to say, it'll be said by someone else. And if there anyone, if you feel like you didn't get a fair amount of time, then please provide in writing those things that you wish that you had had time to express. Now we have about a little over 30 minutes left. We'd like to invite Judy McMakin to come forward. And then we'll go back to the top of the list for those that have not come over 100 miles. Which I've had everyone. And Jim Seymour and Joanne Miller. Hello there, Judy.
Good morning, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. I'm here this morning to speak to a question that you asked us yesterday. I have wonderful, fluffy testimony, but I'll submit it to you in writing. Specifically, I would like to respond to the question that you asked yesterday, what is the value of the State Commission to local commissions? Now, several have talked about that, so I'd like to speak to one particular value that they have provided to Coos County. And by the way, I'm Judy McMakin, the director of the Coos County Commission on Children and Families.
Thank you.
I have 25 years experience with the commission system in that I was appointed to the Juvenile Services Commission in 1981, became its chair in 1982, and after two metamorphoses of the commission system, became the director of the Commission on Children and Families in 1994. So I'm kind of long in the tooth with the commission system. In any case, what I would like to speak to you today, the value of the State Commission, is in leveraging and resource development. State staff regularly informs local staff of available funding resources, both in the state, in the nonprofit areas, and also in the federal venues. This means that one person at the state level is doing the research that 36 people would need to do if they were not available to us. In addition to finding these funding opportunities, they assist with the training on the writing of specific grants, both specifically and generically. They also keep local staff on the cutting edge, ahead of, frankly, a lot of other states in what federal grants expect. For example, over 10 years ago, they were training us in the words mapping and logic models. Now, if you write a federal grant, if you cannot explain the mapping that you have done, if you cannot include the logic model, you won't get past the first level. And a lot of states haven't had that resource, so I think that in that sense, we're, as local commissions writing federal grants, we're ahead of others because of the training the state commission has given us. In Coos County's case, we currently have two federal grants. We have a drug-free communities grant for $100,000 for a five-year period. The state commission provided training to me and other state and other local commission directors in how to write that grant. And it's a very specific piece that we needed to know in order to really compete with other communities from around the nation. The second grant that we have is an early learning opportunities grant. That's $187,000, and that supports a family center and expands child care opportunities in my county. The state actually contacted Congressman Peter DeFazio and asked for a letter of support for us, and they did that with every other county that was also applying for those. So those are two specific examples of how the state supports local commissions and how much value they have to us. And I hope in your considerations you will remember those particular pieces. For Coos County, this year, it means $287,000 in federal funds that we wouldn't have had without the help of the state. So we're very grateful to them and hope that you will remember that in future considerations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and you make a great case for the importance of the state council.
Thank you.
Committee or commission. All right. Is it Mary? Or no, it's Roxanne?
Nope.
I'm sorry.
Keep going.
I'm coming down.
This is Joanne Miller.
Okay, I will catch up with Joanne Miller.
Yes.
Benton County.
All right. Good morning, Chair Richardson, members of the committee. My name is Joanne Miller. I'm the director of the Commission on Children and Families of Benton County, one bit, and have been there for almost 10 years. One of the questions I wanted to respond to as I listened to your discussions yesterday was the value that the State Commission provided with, to the local level. Where I see it is it an arm of my commission? As staffing levels are decreased, I look to the state and have had to look to the state to provide technical support, assistance, and training, not only to me but to my commission members as we move through our systems of support and changes as we develop a seamless system of support for children and families. That means that I have an additional 15 to 18 employees to do the work that we need to have done in our communities in order to change the system. I also wanted to talk just briefly about the juvenile crime prevention piece, because that's also an important piece in our community. One of the things that Benton County has agreed to and has accomplished is looking at all of prevention resources and putting them into one office under the Commission on Children and Families because of that independent local voice and the decision-making that is allowed with the commission system, as well as our advisory role to our local Board of County Commissioners. We've been able to look at prevention as a streamlined approach across the continuum for kids 0 to 18 in our communities. And so we've also done that in our audience with some Healthy Start folks who are very much concerned about the role and where we're going with Healthy Start as far as looking at the shift of the $28.3 million from the commission's budget. The only area that we feel that that money could come from is from Healthy Start. And a little packet here from one of the parents I will leave with the staff. It shows the importance of the role of Healthy Start and how it has changed our lives and our community. I got some written testimony, and I won't give you the fluff or any other things because some of them is said, but I just wanted to let you know that without the State Commission staff, the State Commission as a body that advises the governor, the local commission would not exist. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Seymour?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Seymour. I'm the Executive Director of Catholic Community Services. I have just 1 minute of verbal testimony, and I'd like to show a two-minute video, if I may. I'm here today to speak in support of the State Commission and local commissions, and particularly funding for the Healthy Start program. As Executive Director of Catholic Community Services, I administer our family preservation, family restoration, group living, and independent living programs. In my 33 years of experience, I have not found another program that is more successful or cost-effective than Healthy Start. I met a young couple not long ago who were expecting their first child. They met while they were both in foster care and eventually got married. The young man had been in McLaren School for Boys, and even though he had been clean and sober for several months, he talked to me about a history of alcohol and drug abuse. The mom had been in 8 different foster homes. They both confided that they were afraid they wouldn't make good parents, and they wanted help. I've seen this scenario over and over again. There is something about finding out that you are going to become a parent that creates a teachable moment in the lives of most young women and many young men. If a young mom or dad does not have the skills to parent well, a connection with the circle of support to provide encouragement, and access to the other types of services and supports that are inevitably needed, this moment can pass rather quickly. Soon, the realities and responsibilities of caring for a child 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, begin to set in. This is where the Healthy Start program comes in. The Healthy Start worker is trained to come alongside first birth families and offer the mentoring, connections to support and services, and encouragement that is needed to develop the confidence and skills to parent well. Healthy Start services are extremely cost effective when compared to the cost of family restoration services or raising a child in the foster care system. And 20% of the funding for Healthy Start is raised in the local community by organizations like Catholic Community Services. I could just let you see the parent. Yeah,
that'd be fine. I just need to let everyone know that the Senate has a floor session that begins now, and so they may need to leave. And if so, it's not meant to be discourteous at all. It's just that there's lots of things going on, and we will just continue with this public hearing.
Well, I first went into foster home when I was 8 years old, and it was really scary. It was just a really scary feeling, you know, you just meet these people that you don't even know. You're expected to live with them and eat with them.
Foster home, it was hard for me because, like, going to new school, it was very nerve-wracking. I was kind of shy, and going to a new school, like, a whole bunch of new schools were very hard for me. And being separated from my sister, she was like my best friend. So I've been in and out of foster cares and in and out of treatment facilities and group homes and Hillcrest.
The way my turnaround point was when the first time I went to juvenile detention, I was 12 years old when I went in, you know, I'm really scared. I went in for breaking windows. So I'm in there 12 years old in a, you know, 8x10 cell. And, you know, I was like, wow, I should be, you know, playing baseball or doing a lot of fun stuff, but now I'm a kid sitting in jail. Trying to find a job, I was just really stressed. And with that stress, I tried to medicate myself. I was falling back right where I started. I don't know, as soon as we had the baby, things just flipped upside down, you know. We got involved with Catholic Community Services, which did amazing things for us. And then that same week, I got a full-time job, so I have a steady income coming. It gave me courage, it gave me hope, it gave me a lot of hope, man, because it was kind of like I was falling and my chair broke and they caught me.
And now I'm learning from my mistakes in the past, and I feel very independent. And with my husband, we make good choices together, and he helps me if I, like, fall back.
My future for him, I hope, is I want him to have the best. I don't want him to even have to think about what we went through. I want him to have a childhood like we never had. You know, I really want him to have a childhood play and not have to worry about where am I going to live at or what's going on. That's, a child shouldn't have to worry about those type of things.
And I really don't want him to be in different foster homes and jumped around in different homes like I was, not to be depressed and alone and feel scared like how I was kind of like when I was younger. And I want him to just have a really good life. And
we're breaking the cycle right here.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have representatives from Lane County Family Resource Centers. They'll be followed by Tina Kotek.
and then Dana Thompson.
Chairperson Richardson and representatives, my name is Gloria Griffith, and I work with the Springfield and Marcola school districts and their family resource centers.
I'm Elaine Bryson, and I work for the McKenzie Family Resource Center, which is a small school district located about 60 miles outside of Eugene.
And I'm Peggy Lintula with the Family Resource Center in Cottage Grove with some allergy problems.
And we're going to try our best to take just the 3 minutes, not 3 minutes apiece. So we would like to just express how instrumental the State Commission on Children and Families and Erling County Commission on Children and Families, how instrumental they have been in bringing together all the different services and providers in our communities to provide services to all of our children and families. They were instrumental in bringing together the school districts for the first time, partnering the No Child Left Behind mandates for parent involvement with the different services that are provided in the Lane County area. It is, in many cases, the first time that some of our rural families have even had services into their communities. They've been instrumental in creating family resource centers in every one of our major school district areas, and it's been a partnership with the school districts as well as with all the different social services. Without that, many families in our rural areas would have not had or have not had the services in the past. They've provided a place where different services, different agencies and organizations can bring those services into the neighborhoods where families live.
Family resource centers in Lane County are funded through our local commission's flexible dollars. We have worked, all our family resource centers countywide have worked really hard to leverage these commission dollars to expand programs. In our district, McKenzie, we've been able to receive additional support through private foundations to support a preschool program and family literacy programs, Families in Schools Together, a parenting program for parents of middle school youth. We've been able to develop relationships with urban agencies that we've never been able to have before, such as Relief Nursery, Community Safety Net, and without the coordination in our Family Resource Center, these collaborations would be in jeopardy. And while my district and other school districts in Lane County are very supportive of having Family Resource Centers in their district and show in-kind support through space, supplies, utilities, they do not have the funding to be able to support a coordinator for their district.
Thank you.
Just one other aspect. In Cottage Grove, we have two drop-in days a week. And in one day, we see anywhere from 35 to 45 individuals, about a third of whom are Latino. And I want to address the fact that the Commission on Children and Families, both at a state and local level, have been instrumental in helping us with technical support, in learning what it needs as a community to become culturally competent, and those resources have been invaluable to us. I look at it as a three-legged stool. I have nonprofit help. I have school district help. I have commission help. If anyone goes away, the center doesn't exist. We're very dependent on those dollars.
Thank you very much.
Did you have something else?
No. I just want to also on Ms. Carlson's comments that she made, and she talked about even though we have all these START programs that many children are still not being served. The bottom line is, too, I've been working with families since 1989 and been a consumer myself. We can't take a cookie-cutter approach to parenting. Not one parenting program serves the needs of all families. And I know that when I first started in this business of social services and parenting, I thought, oh, look at all the duplication, look at all the stuff, the money that goes into administration in that. But what I have found is that for every parent that walks through my family center and needs support, needs services, I am constantly searching through all those different programs to find one program that fits them. And it could be just the location of the services. It could be the building that the services in, the reputation it has community-wide. But to try to do a cookie-cutter approach does not work. And so looking at all these different programs is important, and I see it happening in our own community. So thank you very much for letting us come and testify today. You've got a hard job ahead of you. We know we have to cut our own budget thanks to gas, et cetera, gas prices, et cetera. So we appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you, and thanks for taking
Thank
time
you.
To be in. Representative Hanlon?
I just want to check Upper McKenzie River Valley. I have a niece and nephew who are new to the area, and they're newlyweds, and she is a teacher at your elementary school, Darcy Craig.
Oh,
yeah, so
wonderful.
You may have met her and could say hello.
She works extensively with our preschool program teacher that's grant-funded to get the school readiness programs together. She's great.
I knew she did. Yeah. Thanks
you.
For being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tina Kotek? Dana Thompson? Reverend Ann Duffy?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tina Kotek. I'm the Policy Director with Children First for Oregon. Thank you for taking the time to listen to some very eloquent and moving testimony today. It's actually a little daunting to get up here after listening to all the folks who are actually on the front line, helping families and kids every day. And here's some real technical policy speak for you. They're doing good stuff, and they're doing really good stuff. And they're doing it on very limited resources. So thank you for listening to them. I think it's important to remember that no family is like another family, and there needs to be diversity and flexibility. But I have 2 points I'd like to make. One, I know you have a very difficult job, especially as the spending decisions in this building are being disconnected from the revenue discussions. And I hope all of us today, yourselves, myself, the folks listening here, really take the time to talk to their members in the building about revenue, about the fact that if I want, as a legislator, to fund prevention, if I, as a legislator, want to fund intervention, which I'm hearing from this group that you understand why that's a good investment, then we need to find additional dollars. The revenue pie is just not large enough to do what we need to do for our kids and families. And you're hearing from people in all these communities across the state saying they could be doing more. There's waiting lists. There's a lot of need out there. So your job is a tough one. Talk about how to spend the dollars wisely, but then also how do we find the dollars we need to do the right things for our children and families. As we know, children are not a partisan issue, so I want to talk just briefly about the budget plan that's been put out on the Senate co-chair side, but it's not just a Senate issue, it's a House issue as well. From our reading of the budget proposals that came out last week, there's a recommendation for a $28.3 million cut from children and youth. That's $22 million out of the commission system and $6.3 out of juvenile crime prevention grants. Our concern is we have not seen details around that proposal. It's very difficult to comment on the policy discussion behind that proposal without seeing more details. Commissioner Carlson provided some very important positions from the local commission in Marion County around why block granting is problematic. We at Children First and very many folks in this room as well would like to see a high-level policy discussion around that proposal as soon as possible. So we hope that perhaps this group can convene a work group to talk about that, because it's hard to get into all these details in a committee hearing like this. So we'd be happy to help out in that effort, and we thank you for taking the time to listen to what's going on in the state.
Thank you. Dana Thompson.
Thank you. Chair Richardson and committee members, my name is Dana Thompson. I'm an environmental contractor from Portland, and I'm also a foster parent. After being a father since I was 19, my wife asked if perhaps we might be able to make the difference in a child's life. I said I wouldn't say no, and the rest is history. I've learned a lot of things about myself and the dramatic impact that poor parenting has on the lives of all of us as a foster parent. I've learned about the foster care program and the wonderful work that the state employees perform on behalf of all of us in attempting to meet the needs of our state's children, despite low pay and ridiculously heavy caseloads. I've also learned the difficulty that even the most dedicated and resourceful parent will encounter trying to do right for a child, especially a high-needs child. The trials and difficulties we faced in meeting our child's needs were something that made evident to me however dedicated the state agency workers are, professionalism, law, and self-preservation dictate that the welfare workers remain unattached to the children they serve. People change jobs and roles and move on to other agencies or other jobs. Meanwhile, the difficult child may change foster homes numerous times over the course of a few years. However well-meaning social workers are doing a job the one thing that has been consistent in our daughter's life has been the advocacy of the CASA worker. This man is an attorney, and he's been following our girl for the last 9 years. He's dedicated hundreds of unpaid hours to the effort to make sure that she's been safe and that her needs are being met. When she hears his name, her eyes light up. And why not? Most of us had the love and advocacy of our parents behind us for our entire lives. This is the one man whose presence and role has never changed. He's been there for her entire life, and her trust is there for him. A CASA volunteer can speak up for a foster child as no other one in her life can. His advocacy cannot be impugned or dismissed as self-serving. No one questions the motives of the CASA volunteer. Not only has our daughter's CASA volunteer been the one consistent thread throughout a tumultuous life, he's been the most consistent, forthright, and effective advocate for her rights and her future. That CASA volunteer asked me to come here and speak to you today, and I didn't realize the gravity of this testimony until I arrived and listened to the other testimony. As a businessman, it was actually part of what I prepared for my notes. It seems to me that the investing in CASA brings back such a tremendous return. What I'm hearing about this state, what I've learned today about the state commission and its county counterparts, is that you have a tremendous opportunity to leverage my tax dollars in the area of protecting the children in need in this state, in assisting the parents of these children that are in need, and in preventing future abuse by these very children that are the victims today. I urge you to find the money to support this commission, and if you can't find it in the current budget, then have the courage to raise taxes. I'll pay mine.
Thank you. Everyone who would like to pay additional taxes is invited to do so. There is an absolute requirement that you only pay what is on your 1040 or on your tax return, and we would accept all additional payments. We also have a vote on Measure 28 and Measure 30 that say that not everybody agree with the same position of those that are most involved with the advocacy, and we do have to represent the majority vote as well. Representative Duffy. That's Reverend, is that right?
Yes, it is. The Reverend Dan C. Duffy. Chair Richardson and members of the committee, I am the Reverend Ann Duffy, and I am a resident of East Multnomah County. I'm also currently the resource and volunteer coordinator at Children's Relief Nursery. However, I come to my testimony this morning with 26 years of pastoral experience working with families in crisis. I'm here today to testify to the most serious problem, I believe, facing Oregon families. Poverty, unemployment, and single-parent families, high stress, drug abuse are just a few of the risk factors many Oregon families must confront. But you know that. What you may not realize is that 49% of the people most seriously affected by these risk factors wear this size shoe. A very serious problem, which is often a byproduct of these risk factors, is child abuse and neglect. As legislators, you have been called to be good stewards of Oregon's resources. As elected officials who help make policy, who create budgets, and who allocate the financial resources of this great state, you are called to take your duty as stewards most seriously. I'm here to remind you that our most precious resources are the children of this state. As elected officials, you are called to serve the people of Oregon. The children of Oregon are the most valuable members of the flock you have been called to serve. Although 42,455 cases of suspected child abuse were reported in 2003, many here would affirm that countless situations of abused children remain unreported. The victimization of children by adults is one of the most shameful sins our civilized American culture could commit. Lately, I've heard legislators claim that they must have reasons to justify funding early intervention programs to prevent child abuse and neglect. What's obvious to some of us who work with children is that the mistreatment of children always increases the risk of problems they will face as adolescents. As we know, some of these problems are juvenile delinquency, drug abuse, teen pregnancy, poor performance in school, and emotional and mental health disorders. I ask you, is the cost of early intervention really too high a cost to pay? Is the cost of parent education programs really too high a cost to pay? Is the cost of support services to high-risk families really too high a price to pay? As stewards, I ask you to compare these costs with the costs of building and maintaining prisons and drug addiction programs in the future. Is the cost of protecting the most vulnerable members of your flock too high? If it is, I need you to come and tell them this is so. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we have Desiree Nelson and Monica. Looks like Mallory, but I'm not sure if I can read that.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, my name is Desiree Nelson, and I'm from Cottage Grove, Oregon, and I come from a very different perspective, which I hope you will appreciate. I have been a registered nurse, maternal child nurse, since the early 80s, working in rural Oregon. All throughout my career, I have specialized in the pregnant woman and her family. I have been involved in prevention in my heart for my entire career, and when I began as a nurse in the early 80s, it did not exist. It is because of the commission system, and I believe the expertise from the state, that we have a prevention system that I believe is cost-effective. It is not duplicative in services, and you would be really throwing the baby out with the bathwater to dismantle any aspect of the system. You have the best and brightest minds in this room, and I hope you realize what you have. The people that I work with on the ground, not just the families, but members of many other agencies, hospitals, clinics, do not fully understand prevention, how it works. This has been a very, very new way of thinking, and I'm telling you, not everybody is on board. The people you have on board to do the work that gets the results, the outcomes that these experts are telling you, these are the people you want working for you. These are the people you want spending the state dollars. And there's a lot of people out there that need the education, the understanding to know, how do you prevent child abuse? People don't know the answer to that. You know the answer to that. You know how to do it. The state commission, they are the leaders. They are teaching the local commissions, who are teaching the citizens, who are leveraging the dollars, who are coming forth in partnership. This is not duplication of services. This is not spending too much money per child. This is not too much money in administration. It's none of those things that you are afraid of. You can justify House Bill 5505 easily. Easily. Please. Do it. I have never worked for a state agency. I don't know that I ever will. I work with families. Year after year, I work with families until they're 6 to 8 weeks postpartum. It is a window of opportunity, a teachable moment. It's true. They want to do the right thing. Many, many times, I specialize in high-risk families. There is nothing to refer them to. Nothing. Healthy Start is unique. It is a gem. It is on your crown. It does not have capacity to even meet the needs. Please do not do anything to dismantle what a wonderful system you've developed.
Okay.
You should be proud. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Monica.
Good morning. My name is Monica Molina, and I am a program director for the Family Relief Nursery with Volunteers of America Oregon in Portland. And I am here today to thank you for your continued support of our relief nursery program as well as the other relief nursery programs within the state. We have been in operation 13 years in Portland and are the first replication of the Eugene Relief Nursery. Last year, we served 102 families and 134 children. We anticipate serving 125 families and 160 children in the next fiscal year. Our budget is supported by funding from the state of Oregon and from the city of Portland. Our particular nursery provides the therapeutic nursery piece, respite care, home visits, transportation, parent education, and referral. Because our Volunteers of America Oregon Family Relief Nursery program is one of 14 programs within our agency, we're also able to offer additional services to families in the area of rehabilitation, senior services, and child and family services. If our relief nursery were not in place, as well as the other relief nurseries in place, it would remove the safety net established for parents who are at risk of abusing their children. Right now, families have an alternative to abuse through education and support through participation in our program, and without this, there would be no safety net, and we believe increased abuse. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have on our sign-up list three additional individuals plus three that have come from Columbia County. I think what we'll do is we'll see how fast this goes, okay? And we're going to go till 20 till, and then we will recess until 3:30 so that those that have come this far that want to come back can come back, and we'll hear them. I know that many of our committee members may not be able to be here, but I'll be here. And I just want to honor those of you that have come so far and to make sure that you have a right for your voice to be heard, although probably much of what you would say has been said before. Nevertheless, it's your right to have the opportunity. And so,
Mr. Chair, what time does floor session start for the House?
House starts at 11.
Okay, we probably are just starting over there, but I hate to have people have to come back at 3:30. I think we have a responsibility to hear people, as you pointed out. Let me see if I can exempt from the House. I'd be willing, or from the Senate, I would be willing to stay and listen to testimony and have the feel of an opportunity to speak.
Well, that'd be fine. I do need to leave it at 20 till personally, but I'm happy to have someone else continue on. So that it would, is that what you'd like to do, committee members?
Senator?
Yeah, that's. I could probably stay through courtesy.
That'll take 20 minutes or something. All right, we will amend that. And we will not reconvene at 3:30, but we're going to continue this hearing. And so we would now hear from Katie Riley, Joe Craig, and Dr. Charlotte Peterson. And we have on deck Bonnie Speck, two parents from Columbia County.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, my name is Catherine or Katie Riley. And I am pleased to represent the Washington County Commission on Children and Families, of which I'm chair at the present time. We are a volunteer group, but we rely also on our staff and on the state commission. I've turned in some written testimony. I won't repeat what I have said there. I wanted to speak to the issue of the state commission and the relationship with the local commissions, and also with the possibility of changing the commission activities to be under DHS. And paid life, I am on the faculty at the Department of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at OHSU. And so I'm familiar with DHS and with public health issues. And first of all, I would like to say that in terms of the relationship of our local commission to the state commission...
I need to let you know, you've got to really wrap this up quick. I mean, you're still in introduction time.
Yeah. I'm going to finish up, okay? I just want to say that the state commission provides good technical assistance to us. They provide an overview and a cohesiveness for 36 counties that we would not otherwise have. Now, transferring that function to DHS, I believe they would not be able to do it as efficiently as the state commission does. DHS has many issues of their own, and I believe that the issue of prevention would be buried within DHS. Not to say that DHS, what they do, is not important and everything, but they have a lot on their plate already. And I think that the state commission office has become very lean and very efficient in the process. They've even cut their own staff so that they could be more efficient and are very effective. And I believe that the state commission should continue to serve that purpose and serve us. It helps us to leverage many community resources within our own community, and also that leverage additional federal funding, which then in turn helps our community as well. We have been able to do so as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I can tell you that there's many of us who think that the commission sets an example of organization efficiency that could be utilized elsewhere.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree.
Joe.
Chair Richardson, committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. I'm really concerned about the proposal to transfer, to abolish the commission and transfer the money to DHS. Yet I've been hearing how supportive this group is of the commission activities, and I'm really happy to hear that. But these activities, though, are not just important to the individual families. It goes way beyond that. This is the real goal is a healthy community with a healthy future. The goal is improved norms, not just helping an individual specific family. It's a change for the future. To accomplish significant change, people and communities must be able to take the lead, to be able to design what they want to accomplish and to make the decisions. In other words, they don't want to just attend a meeting put on by a state agency with some state representatives who are there because they were directed to do that. If I remember correctly, the Commission on Children and Families was created because DHS and Children's Services Division were unable to provide the services that communities and families need. They were unable to actually implement plans that would mobilize communities to provide the supports to families. With the leadership and technical support of the Commission, all 36 counties in Oregon are doing this now and have been for years. In January of this year, I left DHS after 21 years, 6.5 of those years as manager of field offices. And I have a lot of respect for DHS, a lot of good friends there. But there is no way that they can come close to accomplishing what the commission has accomplished. As Senator Winter said yesterday, we are beginning to see results, and I think that everybody agrees with that. With over 9,000 employees and a top-down structure, DHS truly is the black hole of resources. The $22 million would be swallowed up by DHS, and there would be nothing to show for it at the community level. You would no longer see the results we want. This is because their work priorities are constantly changing. They change depending on who is pressuring them. It could be emphasis on food stamp quality control because of federal sanctions. It could be reduction of the TANF caseload because of pressure from the legislature. It could be identifying disabled people on the caseload because of pressure from the advocate groups. This changes constantly. By mixing an agency whose priorities constantly change with this extremely high rate of staff turnover, the results are the inability to do the close quality work with people over a long period of time. They won't be able to accomplish the changes that we all want because of this dysfunction that's inherent within that agency. I ask you to please support House Bill 5505 and allow the commission to continue to be successful as they have been. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Peterson.
Yes, thank you. My name is Dr. Charlotte Peterson. I'm a psychologist from Eugene. I've worked for 30 years as a psychologist, and I have a specialty in working with children. Thank you very much for allowing me to continue to testify, even though it's past the time. I understand why you would want to try and save money and cut some of the money out of primary prevention without knowing what you've heard today. Prevention is a really difficult aspect of psychological treatment to understand. I really believe that the commission helps us avoid overlap. I don't think that there's duplication. And I specifically want to speak to the Healthy Start program. As a psychologist, I know that what happens at the birth of a child and in the first few moments and weeks and months of that child's life sets the stage for whether that child will trust in relationships for the rest of their lives. I bet I spend 95% of my time as a psychologist working to help people heal from how they were hurt by their parents. And yet I've never met a parent that wanted to hurt their child. When I look at those parents, they're holding that baby in their arms. They want to do the best they can. But we need to face that we have a crisis in caregiving in our country. And I can speak to this because I've spent the last 30 years observing parenting practices in other countries. The last 15 years I've traveled to and observed parenting practices and cultures that are nonviolent. And there's a direct correlation between nonviolence in the culture and the amount of nurturing a child is given during their first year of life. I know that when children are brought to me that have gone through the foster care system or have been early daycare and don't have attachments to their own parents, that there's very little I can do at age 4, 5, 6, or especially 16 to remediate that problem because they don't trust adults. Healthy Start is a unique program because they're not working with children that have already been hurt. They're going to each mother and parent of a child at birth and saying, do you need some help? Imagine if a mom was at the top of the steepest ski slope with a baby in arms and had never had a ski lesson. Why don't our parents have ski lessons? Because we have a breakdown here. We have a crisis in caregiving. We have a breakdown in the families. We have a breakdown in support. We used to, in previous generation, have a breakdown in extended family support. Now we have a breakdown in nuclear family support. We have children that are not even growing up with a nuclear family. Why do we keep hearing about drug abuse? Why do we hear about meth abuse? Meth is one of the worst drugs I've ever seen in terms of what it does to families. But why? It's because people are trying to self-medicate. And what we do in terms of prevention of this generation helps all future generations, because what we have is a generational apprenticeship of how to parent that's been broken down. People don't know how to parent. And so that's why the state has to help them. Just to finish, if that mother at the top of the ski slope asks for help, says, I need some help in learning how to ski, and if we say, sorry, there's no funding to help you know how to ski, then we will be picking up that child at the bottom of the slope that's been battered from the many falls. And we know how much more expensive that is. And there's some things that can't ever be remediated. There's indelible scars on the psyche of that child about trust and about being able to form relationships, future relationships in life, and being able to parent their own children in future generations. And I can guarantee you, as a person that's in the business of healing psyches, it's much cheaper to build a child than to repair an adult.
Thank you very much. Yeah. You know, there's a debt that is created by improper parenting at a young age, and it often doesn't come due until the child's about 15 or 16, and then it comes due with a vengeance. Will you both be able to stay?
Your courtesies.
Okay. Then I'll pass this on to you. To you, brother. You take care, and I will step out. We need to now have Bonnie Speck and the three parents from Columbia County.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to announce, if there's anyone out there, it's looking like, feeling like we might be able to go to about 11:10. There's one caveat to that. The Senate may be subject to a call here where we are required to go. But if there's people in the overflow rooms that want to testify, if we can squeeze them in, depending on how our list looks, you might want to come to the main hearing room where there are now chairs available.
They are indeed. Okay. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for giving us the chance to speak. I know you have heard hours of testimony at this point and are probably ready to move on, but I appreciate it. My name is Bonnie Speck. I am the Columbia County Program Manager for the Healthy Start Program. I do not come here today, though, to speak as a program manager. I come to speak as a parent and as a recipient of programs. This is my son, Malcolm Speck. I became pregnant with him when I was 19. I was straight out of high school. I moved to Astoria. I had no support. I did not have my family there. I did not know what to do as a parent. And I became involved in the Healthy Start program.
We were involved in Healthy Start for 9 months. At that point in time, I moved to Washington for work, and that it is not available in Washington, so we cannot continue services there. What Healthy Start did for me, I believe, is build my confidence as a parent, to be a good parent and to advocate for my child, which I had to do later on, as you will soon find out. Healthy Start provides a window of time once a week where the focus is particularly on the parent and the child, and they build that bond. And that bond is so important to build during that window of time. And I was given the chance to build that bond with my child, and I greatly appreciate it. When Malcolm was 18 months old, he stopped developing at a normal rate. Up until that time, he had developed fine as far as we knew. And I knew that for a fact from 0 to 9 months because he was in the Healthy Start program, and they do the developmental screenings. When he was about 2 and a half, we became a part of the Early Head Start program in Washington State. The teacher in that program said that he had some autistic tendencies, and she referred him to an early intervention program. Malcolm, at about 3 and a half, was diagnosed with high-functioning autism. And Malcolm and I went through a lot of challenges because there's a lot of behavior issues with autism, a lot of communication challenges that go on. But we were able to pull it together, and it was in peace because of the prevention programs that were available, and they were different programs. There was a different point of expertise that we received in each of the programs that was a support system for us to be able to do the proper thing to continue his development. I am just so proud of Malcolm and the achievements that he has made as a child that has had his own challenges. And when he was in first grade, he could not read. He's now a third grader. He's 9 years old, and he was tested at a sixth grade reading level. And he is no longer, well, he is on his individualized education plan still, but he's almost done. It's almost for sure that as long as he makes the fourth grade transition, we're probably going to be taking him off of that. And I do think that that's because of prevention programs, because they were there for us. I would not have had a clue what to do without those programs. So I just wanted to be able to say that and share my experience and to be able to show off my wonderful child here and the amazing things he's been able to do. So,
make sure you get the video. That'll be on tape, and you can order that up from Legislative Video Services.
Thank
That'd
you.
Be fun to have.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Miranda, and I've been involved with Healthy Start ever since I was three months pregnant with my daughter Emily, and they've been coming over to my house for at least a year and a half, and they've been helping me through with my child because this is my first child I've had, and Healthy Start has helped me by knowing what to do when my child came, because I had no clue what to do. I was 16, I was that age, you know. And they've helped me through a lot of stuff with them, with her. And Dave told me when I had her, I had preeclampsia in my head, and that she had to be taken out a month early. And sorry.
You're doing fine.
And when they took her out, she wasn't breathing at all. And they prepared me to babies first, and they taught me how to do CPR to her if she couldn't breathe. And they gave me a breathing monitor for her to breathe, and they gave me a heart machine for her.
And so I thank you guys for having those two programs for me, because that was a really hard time for me. And now she's 1 year old. She's doing very good. And she is one now. And also I've been going to Even Start for the past 2 to 3 years, and they've helped me a lot between my schoolwork. And without this program, I wouldn't have been in school right now. I would have had a lot of problems with her and everything else. And I thank you for having these, and thank you for listening to my problems.
Well, thank you for sharing the story, and good luck with your 1 year old. And you sound like a pretty neat mother to take all of that on and do so well. So thank you so much for coming and telling us that.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Adams, and I come not only representing myself, I also come representing my 8-month-old daughter, Colleen. I joined Healthy Start about 15 months ago when I was 3 months pregnant with her. And I was not married at the time, but I was about to get married to my husband, who he and I have been married for a year, and it's a very stable relationship. This program has helped not only me, but has helped my family and I come through a lot of hard times. And it's because of Healthy Start that I am just now getting on my feet in, quote, the real world. They referred me to a job fair in our community, and because of this job fair, I now have a part-time job earning $8 an hour at a assisted living facility. I am very involved with Healthy Start. I very much believe in giving back to the programs that have helped me so much, and it would very much disturb me if this program didn't exist anymore. I am the parent representative on the advisory board for the community, or for the county, and it just, I love this program. This program has been so much of a big help. They not only help families, but they, like myself and my husband and my daughter, but they also help a lot of single mothers that don't have the support program that I have. Excuse me. I would hate for a program like Healthy Start to disappear or to discontinue. They're, like I said, they're a huge help to first-time parents, not only like myself, but also the single mothers who are unmarried and they don't have jobs, and a lot of the times they live in a women's resource center, which I'm lucky that I don't. Please support Healthy Start and the Bill 5505, because it's very important for our community. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming and sharing those stories. They're very, very meaningful. Okay, we finished with the sign-up sheets.
We have some folks from the Amhill and Douglas County that want to speak on juvenile crime prevention.
Okay, thank you. We have some people from Yamhill County. Okay, yeah. We're going to have some people come in from Yamhill County to talk about the juvenile justice grant.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, we're going to have you identify yourself, because we don't have the sign-up list. So if you could tell us who you are and tell us what you want to say.
My name is Kelly Southern. I'm with Options Counseling. We provide MST, multi-systemic therapy, to families in Douglas County, and we're funded through juvenile crime prevention funds. These funds come to us through the Commission on Children and Families, our local Commission on Children and Families, who really orchestrate the services that are provided to families. I bring with me today Christy, who is a mother of young children in Douglas County, and she's received some services, and would like to say something about why this is important.
Hi, I am a single mother.
And could you identify yourself?
My name is Christy Tharp, and I've been involved with the MST program for 6 months with my 11-year-old son. And I'm here today to voice my support for this critically important part of the juvenile crime prevention program. I've worked in law enforcement over the past 15 years and have seen what can happen when an intervention is not made in a troubled child's life. That's why I wanted my son involved with MST. Not only has he learned how to take five when he's feeling frustrated and violent, I have learned valuable coping skills and techniques to avoid fueling my aggressive son's arguments. I could not have done this without Kelly and the support of MST. Our society and our children cannot afford to lose this program. Like I said, I have a long history working in law enforcement. My dad is a retired deputy, and my youngest son's father is a deputy currently. The price we pay to arrest, convict, and house repeat offenders is overwhelming. We need to correct this problem while we can. Juvenile crime prevention works. MST works. It's a small price to pay when it's saving the child who needs saved the most.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Julia Shatola, and I come from Yamhill County. I work with a nonprofit agency there and am funded through juvenile crime prevention and through Commission on Children and Families. What I do is functional family therapy, very similar to what these ladies are doing. And I want you to know a little bit about what those dollars are doing in the communities. There's a couple things that happen. First of all, the ladies that spoke before us that were here, I'm sure you understand this, but I really want you to understand that that's not unusual. Those stories are not unusual, and there's more and more and more. Our referral lists are so long, we can hardly see straight. And that's not necessarily a good thing. It means people need help. The good news is people are learning that there's programs out there that can help them. We're time limited. Both these programs are evidence-based, so we know they work. We follow a structure. We're trained. And we give the cornerstone of both these programs is you give the families the skills they need to go to the next step, not to be all better, but to get enough strength and skills to move on to the next thing. It's very much of a what we call strength-based program. So when you're looking at strength-based, our job is not to go in and change the family, but to use what they do well. And I want you to know that this is a very key point that's happening all over the country, this kind of work. It's a very different way of approaching the family, to go into their home, to meet at their level of need and meet them where they are and match to them rather than to take them out and pull them apart. We are seeing a reduced crime rate. It helps to prevent recidivism. We're hoping over time we see less children in foster care. And we're starting to use these programs within the foster care system as well. So I just want you to know that these programs provide some hope where it's needed most. And it's not as expensive as a lot of the things that we do when we pour in later to Band-Aid. So, thank you very much. Thanks, sir.
Well, thank you very much for coming and testifying. I think that exhausts the sign-up list and extra people that have asked to testify. So I think at this point we'll close the hearing. Thank you all very much.
Thank
this
you
was
coming.
Incredible.
Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it. It's educational for us.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah.